Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Out We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings-on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm Martin Riley, the ageing, injury-prone fullback of the podcast. Let's hope I don't break like Sam Barron was broke by Leeds. And I'm joined by the ageing, injury-prone striker of the podcast, Dan Holdsworth. He's been used more than Pat Bamford. Let's hope him and Pat remain unbroken. Dan, how are you doing?
I'm feeling very broken today because it's my first day back at work after Christmas. So, but otherwise, I'm fine. How are you, mate?
I'm doing good. I've had a nice home-cooked Indian for tea, which is always one of my favourites to cook. And I'm very much full after it, so I'm doing good on that point. How about you? Have you had anything nice to eat?
Yeah, snap. I had an Indian tonight, actually, homemade. So there we are. Snap. And homemade flatbreads to go with it as well.
Okay, that's good. My accompaniment wasn't homemade. I just had some store-bought naan bread to go with it. I've never been very good at making bread or anything to go with curries, so that will have to do. But we're not here to talk about food, even though we do it every single time. We're here to talk about Leeds United and their recent two fixtures against West Brom and Birmingham. As Birmingham is the most recent of the fixtures, we'll talk about that game in a bit more detail. But first, we'll discuss the West Brom loss. Firstly, with the game summary. So Leeds started this game in their usual 4-2-3-1 formation, with West Brom opting for a slight change to their usual formation and went with a 4-3-3 shape. Leeds possessed the ball more than West Brom in the opening phase of the game, with West Brom mainly looking to attack in transition. However, Leeds weren't able to make this possession pay off, with only half chances created. West Brom got into the game a little more around halfway through the first half and had some spells of possession and some good chances via set pieces, one in which a shot was cleared off the line. West Brom were able to make a spell of possession pay off when Jed Wallace put a cross into the box. The initial shot from Diangana was saved, but the ball broke straight back into his path, and he called from close range, making the score 1-0 in the 37th minute. Leeds had the greater share of possession for the rest of the half, but weren't able to create any good opportunities. Second half started off with West Brom having a good spell of possession and generating a lot of set pieces. Leeds got into the game around 10 to 15 minutes in and made some substitutions, and for the rest of the game, heavily done with West Brom happy to sit deep and wait for counterattacks. Leeds weren't able to score or create any high-value chances, and the game ended 1-0 to West Brom. And we'll move on to the interrogation. So, in this game, Leeds dominated possession in the first half, but West Brom put up more than double our XG, creating 1.19 XG to our 0.53. Firstly, what was happening to enable West Brom to create more XG than we did?
So I think it's down to do with the good tactical setup from Carlos Corberan. So if you look at the way sort of West Brom moved the ball, they moved it quite well, sort of drawing us in quite well, and then they left Jed Wallace sort of high and wide. And I think they knew that we would probably like invert on our left side, and we had Sam Byram sort of sat behind Crescencio Somerville on our left side, making our left side very narrow. So on their right-hand side, Jed Wallace was able to always be a spare man and be loose on the right-hand side. So I just think from a tactical perspective, they always had a really good out ball. And that was just a really reliable route to goal for them. So they just had a more reliable route to goal than we had. And I also think when they were in kind of in more advanced positions, like just the way they built and the way they had sort of players in attacking positions, and the way they had their kind of players spaced out and attacking good areas was way better in terms of a setup than what we had. So I just thought they were just way better set up for the tactical challenge of the game than we were. Like I say, they realised there would be a weakness in our defence. They attacked that relentlessly with Jed Wallis high and wide. He's a great crosser, and they just always had good runners and good players and like hitting good spaces like frequently. And I think that just hurt us a lot. And it felt like the opposite for us. Like we didn't really have a really clear idea or way of hurting them beyond balls over the top, which did work to some extent. But you know that was it really from that perspective.
Yeah, I'd agree with all what you said there about West Brom's setup. That was probably the biggest thing. What was stopping us from creating more chances and them creating better ones than us, really. Especially with the way their right side was operating with Wallis high and wide and Furlong was inverting, which caused a little bit of confusion around the goal, especially as to who was going to continue tracking Furlong, and then no one was tracking Wallis. And it was just the spacing was all off in that moment, and they took advantage. And Wallis had plenty of space to put his ball in, and yeah, that's how the goal came about. Just regards to us ourselves and that, why we weren't able to create some shots. This is a continuation of the last one. There was an article which we put out recently about some of the reasons why we weren't able to make more of West Brom and bypass their very well drilled mid block which they had in place, and. I felt that in this game especially, we just didn't move the ball quickly enough from one side to the other to take advantage of base where it was. And in particular, when Jed Spence was getting quite high and in some lovely space, and we were getting the ball over to him, but it was through just short passes, and then West Brom were able to set themselves for him and surround him with players, so he couldn't do anything when he got on the ball. And that's something I think Bob Brown will have known about us, that we sometimes don't do those long balls from one side of the pitch to the other. And it's one thing that I think we have the players capable of doing in both midfield slots, both Mpadu and Kamara are both able to hit those long balls.
Centre-backs can do it as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of players who are capable of doing it. And in this game particularly, we had Groove who came in and he showed some very good long balls in his locker. But for some reason, we weren't looking to try those into wider areas. And that is something which a lot of teams use against us, and West Brom did it themselves to pretty good effect. And the spacing that we have between our defensive lineup is quite narrow, and let's say almost quite similar to the way Jesse Marsh had us in this game.
Yeah, you beat me to it. I was just going to make that point. Yeah. It was like we're all on top of each other's toes, aren't we? The attackers were all on top of each other, weren't they? You know, clumped up in little clumps, and that's fairly easy to defend, isn't it? You just kind of get bodies across and put a wall up against it, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. And that just didn't help us because the people were getting in each other's way, and we weren't able to get anyone in clear space because of that. And it was easy for West Brom to defend. In that, and their spacing in their defence was better than what ours was. They made sure to have players a little bit wider for the fullbacks, keeping an eye on Spence and the rest of it. And yeah, it was just a much better tactical setup from Corbran than what Harker went for with us, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's the old idea, isn't it? The you know, you're up against the back four, so there are sort of five channels to attack, aren't they? You know, the kind of wide channels and the three inside channels, if you like. And we weren't kind of filling all those gaps, were we? We'd find, you know, on the right, our right hand side, we'd have Rutter drive out there, Perrault go out there, and we'd have Dan James, and, you know, and Spence as well. So we'd have four players in the outside two channels or something, and there'd be nothing on the other, in the, like just Somerville on his own, the other side, or vice versa. Like if we just spaced our attackers out a little bit better, you know, West Brom would have to spread their defence out a bit more, and then you know, you've got a little bit more space to manoeuvre. And also another thing is we didn't have a great deal of depth, did we? There weren't that many players making that many runs in behind apart from for big long balls. So in settled possession, when the midfield had the ball, you know, some of them would come towards the ball. Rutter would come towards the ball. Perrault would come towards the ball. There was no one making a run towards the ball while someone made a run the other way, you know, just to kind of distract the defence, or, you know, give the defence different depth problems, if that makes sense, as well as spacing problems. So yeah, it just felt very a lot of kids chasing the ball type performance, really.
Now, one thing you mentioned there was not players going for runs beyond the defence often enough, and that's something which I think changed in the second half when Bamford came onto the pitch. He was making a lot of good runs, and so that this sort of ties into our next question, actually. So why weren't we able to create better chances in the second half when this changed. So we had these players who were making these runs, and we just weren't taking advantage of those. Skinny Keith quite needed to be why we weren't trying to use it more often in the game.
Oh, yeah, perhaps just unfamiliarity. I mean, I don't think... I suppose unfamiliarity with Pat Bamford from probably like Perreault and Rutter and those guys. I haven't played a great deal with them, have they? Just the odd spell here and there. And Gruev as well, who got quite a bit of ball. So I just don't think they were looking for those passes, really. So I just think it's probably just unfamiliarity, and it's probably just something they were told. Because we saw it, if we'll get to this on the Birmingham game, but we saw a lot more of that in the Birmingham game, didn't we? Those runs from Pat and players looking to find him. So I guess it's probably just a case of unfamiliarity, I would say. I mean, these players should know to look for that, but they weren't doing it, were they?
No, I think there were some times where they did spot the run, but then they just went for an easier option. I think it was been too safe with ball almost at times. And against a team like West Brom, who are very solid, you have to try these high-risk passes more often to get in behind, because their line was quite high, especially in the second half. It got deeper toward the end of the second half, but I think not long after Pat came on, it was relatively high. And that was, I think, because in the opening of the second half, they had a pretty good spell of dominance to West Brom. And would you put that down to the way that they started the second half, or do you think it's something that we were doing differently?
No, I think they came out quite intense second half, didn't they? You know, they had a 1-0 lead, and I guess they just felt like, you know, taking the game to Leeds and sort of dampening Leeds. You know, they were probably worried about Leeds coming out really hard at the start of the second half. So it's probably just like the best form of defence sometimes can be attack. It's probably a bit of that attitude, isn't it? And they probably just came out and thought, right, we're going to go hard at these and, you know, and keep the momentum with us. Because by the end of the first half, the momentum was with West Brom, wasn't it, I think? It's probably just a case of keeping the momentum going, really, from that perspective, and, you know, making Leeds turn round and chase back. So it's probably that. I mean, just on the kind of runs in behind thing, when we're playing well early in the season, one thing I noticed and really liked, particularly with Dan James and Somerville, is how quick they were to run forward, how quick they were to look to run in behind. They were very quick and sharp to go quickly, and it seems like almost like they're not doing that anymore, although we haven't done that over this little sticky little patch we've had. I'd just like to see more of that, because, like I say, I think the depth of our attacks is off at the moment, isn't it? Or it has been. Perhaps looked a little bit better against Birmingham. But, you know, we've got a lot of players like Rutter and Perreault who tend to come towards the ball. So we need players that do the opposite, don't they, and go the other way, you know, just to change the depth of the attack. And if Somerville and Dan James are coming towards the ball as well, then no one's going behind. So, yeah, it's just something that definitely didn't happen against West Brom a great deal, apart from a couple of good long balls that went over the top to Nonto and Rutter. So, yeah, I just think we need to think about that and have more of a systematic approach to kind of, like, depth and spacing with the way we attack.
That makes total sense. And after the spell where Bomb had fell possession towards the start, when they were pressing a bit more and were on the ball a lot more and had those set piece opportunities, Leeds had the majority of possession, really, with second half possession standing at 68% to Leeds. So we had nearly 70% of possessions. So I think we've probably discussed all this more, but why do you think we weren't able to create more from that possession which we had? Because we were camped around their box quite often, numerous times, and we just weren't able to get any good opportunities. There's always players in the way or not the right pass chose. What would you say were one of the biggest reasons for this was?
Yeah, I mean, the tempo's way off, wasn't it? You said before, the speed of the way we played, you know, it was very, to get the ball out to Spence, it would go through three players before it got there, where we could just do with Ampadu picking the ball up and getting it directly out to him quickly, and then shifting West Brom quick, and then moving just a bit quicker. So the tempo is definitely off, and that's partly good defensive display from West Brom. They were kind of getting in our way and you know, making it difficult for us to play quickly. Give them credit, and it was a good setup from Corbyn in that respect. So we were too slow to play, and then just like, let's say, like a lack of discipline in the way we attacked. It was just all a bit ad hoc, wasn't it? And like it almost felt like a lot of players who had been thrown together in pre-season, and this is the first pre-season game, you know, it just felt a bit disjointed, wasn't it, really? What was the clear idea? Beyond occasional balls over the top, what was the clear idea breaking West Brom down? I mean, I don't know, do you?
Whipping crosses into the box, that seemed to be the only thing which I could see. And we don't really have someone who's a very good target for headers, really. Pat is decent with them, but nothing special, really, even though he did score against Birmingham. But
we're a fairly big team, Leeds, aren't we? Yeah, we're not a small team, are we, really, anymore? But we're not exactly tiring headers of the ball either. You know, it's not something we have a lot of, so.
I think that's about everything for the West Brom analysis, so I think we'll move on to the Birmingham game, unless you've got anything else that you want to go over for the West Brom game.
No, just just credit to Corbron really for a really, really good tactical setup. But I think this shows the problem with with this league, isn't it? These guys, you know, these teams can put up a really great tactical display and then go and lose the and beat Leeds and then go and lose the next match. It's a really, like, really frustrating, annoying thing, isn't it? But I think we need to have a better solution to these sort of games, don't we? We need to work on a better solution for these sort of games, and we need to have more, I guess, more systematic ways of getting into dangerous areas with the right players arriving at the right time, at the right, you know, in the right order, if that makes sense. So we don't always arrive, do we, with a near post runner, a far post runner, and a penalty spot runner? I mean, how often do you see that?
Very rarely. It's usually one or the other, but never all three. We don't often have those options to. So
at least two, front and back post at least, yeah. And someone arriving late for anything that bobbles. How often do we see that? Now, we've got someone who should be ideal for arriving late in Perreau, like very good at that. You know, how often have we generated attacks where he's like running on into the penalty spot just as it's cut back for him to like run onto? We don't do enough of that, do we? And like his superpower, his championship superpower, is arriving and hitting those balls and finishing very well. We've got players like Somerville and James who are super quick and can beat a marker and can whip a ball across really well. Would seem an obvious thing to be working on. And yeah, just I don't know why we don't do it and why we don't construct attacks in such a way that we, you know, Somerville and James and players like that aren't hitting, you know, cutbacks from the goal line, basically, you know, to the penalty spot onto the edge of the 6-yard box, and why the runners aren't.
Yeah, there's not enough of players trying to get even to the byline to put in those backs and pullbacks. It's usually just a little bit deeper than that, and it's usually easily out. But when you get to the byline, it's a bit more difficult for defenders to deal with. And we saw those sort of movements a lot with Bielsa, and that was the way he generated a lot of stuff with the two advancing eights getting into the box and crashing with Click, scoring mini goals. Those sort of things is what we need to see more of. But I would agree.
I mean, maybe it's really, really hard because, I mean, Pep at Man City made his living on that, didn't he? Sané and Sterling, they were the masters of that kind of stuff, weren't they? Arriving and putting those goals away. You know, the far side winger arriving at the back stick and tapping away. I guess maybe we're talking about this as if it's a really easy thing to construct and it takes someone like Pep to really make it work. I don't know. Make those kind of goals work.
Well, it's possible. These sort of things could be done through concerted practice in the training and how the training is set up. And we know, for one, that Bielsa is very good at getting his ideas across and getting these concerted patterns of play going. But we can dive into these sort of questions in the future pods. We've got a bonus pod coming up, so we could dive into that a bit more then, I think. Moving on to the Birmingham analysis. So first of all, with a game summary. Leeds approached this game with their usual 4-2-3-1 formation, with Birmingham going for a 3-5-2. Leeds had a great share of possession across the whole of the first half, with Birmingham only having small periods of possession, mainly looking to attack in transition. Leeds created some decent chances in the opening 30 minutes, with Birmingham struggling to create. Leeds broke the deadlock in the 34th minute when Patrick Bamford headed home with Dan James cross, making the score 1-0. Leeds continued to apply pressure, and it was played off just before half-time, with Dan James scoring with a deflected effort and the junior third goal back, making the score 2-0, going into the second half. The second half continued much like the first, with Leeds dominating possession, Birmingham having the odd spell of possession here and there, but mainly not creating much for Birmingham either way. Leeds continued their possession and made a transition attack payoff in the 67th minute, with Crescencio Somerville again burying a shot from, I think it's a junior Firpo cutback, and it ended 3-0 to Leeds. So that's about everything for the Birmingham game. Moving into the interrogation, but before we do that, time for an ad break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm just going to have to quickly plug the Patreon so Tom Alderson doesn't murder me in my sleep. Don't worry, patrons, you don't have to listen to this part. Our patrons get access for as little as $1.99 per month, which gives you ad-free podcasts, and if you want to pay a little more, you get other benefits, including early access to our preview pods, analysis articles, videos, buds, podcasts. Recently, we've done an article on the West Brom game that we mentioned earlier. If you want to find out more about our Patreon, please visit Dan.
Patreon.com/ASAW Patreon.
Great. Now let's get back to the analysis. So, given our recent struggles creating XG in open play phases, why were we able to create as much as we did in open play in this Birmingham game? For reference, we created 1.75 open play XG, which is the fifth highest of the season so far. So what would you put that down to?
Did we create a lot more set piece as well? Because I thought you said it was it 2 point something overall XG? I forget now.
Yeah, there was 2.8 in total, with 1.75 of that being open play. So there's a good chunk of set piece XG in there as well.
Yeah. So, like, some of the issues, I mean, I'm going to confess to the listener here. I've got a season ticket, but I didn't go at this game. I gave it away. And I've only just watched the game today. This is Wednesday the 3rd, by the way. So it's quite interesting watching it kind of fresh a couple of days later. And I was watching the game for the first 20 minutes, and I was like, this is dog shit. This is just like the West Brom game. And then it just kind of came into life a little bit around 20, 25 minutes to half an hour. And I'd love to go back in really detail and look at what changed. But I wonder if we just started to... Some of the combination with Rutter and Bamford and Somerville and James as well, actually, was really great. Some of the movement started to really improve. And the way, you know, Bamford were running behind, or if Bamford dropped deep, Somerville would go behind. So it just felt like a very much more fluid... Once we got going, once we got into the game, you know, sort of back end of the first half, second half, it just felt like a really, really fluid performance where there were runners in behind, there were people dropping close to the ball, the gate, we were stretching the pitch better. So it just felt like overall we were doing all the basic things that we've grumbled about against West Brom. We weren't doing. We didn't do against Preston either, and we did do here. So it just felt like great. So just having Bamford's profile probably helped, I think. You know, a centre forward that took care of the centre backs and went behind. And I think we just saw way more kind of decisive forward runs from like Somerville and James as well, and I guess that made a ton of space for Rutter just to do Rutter things. I mean, Jorginho, you know, sexy as anything, the way, you know, but he had an absolute acre of space to do Jorginho things. So, you know, if you have a good centre forward making space for him, he's gonna thrive, isn't he?
Yeah, I would agree with all you said there. It was a lot more fluid than what we have seen, and it was just very good to watch. I do know what you mean about the opening 20 or so minutes. That it was a little bit stodgy at times, but it sort of worked its way out of that. There were a few opportunities mixed into that time, but it did really start clicking around half an hour in, I think. And
yeah, around half an hour, yeah, I would say.
Yeah. So, and then after that clicking point, then we really didn't need too much help. Although Birmingham, you have to say, probably didn't help themselves too much with the way they're set up. But before we go into that, the next question is focusing on that. So we had a question from the delightful Jacob of this parish. He said, how much can we read into yesterday for going forwards? The lack of quality of the opposition was pretty flat. Just so you know, he's not talking about individual player quality here, but more the way they were set up and coached to play this game.
Yeah, Birmingham do have some decent players, actually. Some strong championship players in there. I think they obviously, Rooney's been sacked since then, so a half-decent coach will get them playing again, really, I would think. You know, there was a reason there were six in October. You know, a good coach could get tuned out of those players. But yeah, just in terms of the setup, it kind of felt like a bit like Watford at the start of the season when they didn't come to press. They came to try and play football, but they didn't quite have a good deep block. It's just like they were kind of between... Two schools. Well, you know, were they supposed to be pressing us and pressuring us? Were they supposed to be low blocking? What were they doing? It just felt like there was no real, they had no real clear idea about how they were going to make life difficult for Leeds. Like Preston had a very clear idea about how to make it difficult for Leeds. West Brom obviously did. And it kind of felt like Birmingham just came just to play a game of footy without really any tactical plan. It was just like they kind of played a 3-4-3 or a 3-5 or a 3-4-1-2, whatever you want to call it. And it was just so easy for us to get in behind their wing-backs who didn't really work all that hard, then drag that back three apart. And it just seemed like there was so much space for us to play with, I felt. So, yeah, it's just a weird lack of a game plan more than anything else. Like, what was the plan? But, you know, what was their plan? Other than playing a couple of quick forwards and trying to hit in behind us now and again.
Yeah, you've got that spot on. Especially when I noticed the way that they have shifted to a back five, say whatever you want to call it, 5-3-2, three,
yeah,
for whatever it is. But I think they haven't played that system all season, so they shifted to this three system against us specifically. Every other game this season, it's been a back four. So in this game, they decided to go with a back three, which it's clear that players didn't really understand the spacings correctly as to what they should be doing to stop our players having space. And you can tell, it really told. And their press, they were trying, I think it was meant to be a high press, but it just very rarely worked. I think it worked maybe once or twice during the whole game, a little bit more in the second half, I think it was. But largely, it wasn't a very good press at all. And that helped us to get forward easily.
How many times did we see Somerville down the outside of the outside centre-back or Dan James? And that outside centre-back having to go out and then Bamford having an acre to run into between the middle centre-back and the outside one, either way. Just saw it a lot, didn't we? You know, and then if it didn't go to Bamford, Rutter's running the other side of that centre-back. So it was just acres of space for our front four to run at their back three. It's like, what are you doing, lads?
Yeah, it did definitely make it easier for us. So it's a good question, that, from Jacob. So there's not really too much we can really take from this game, because Birmingham did really make things easy for us. So we'll have to hope that the fluidity that we had in our attack continues on to next games and it helps with morale. I think that's probably the biggest thing now, that we did really need to win this game. No matter how bad Birmingham were, it was a game which we needed to win to stop two losses in a row becoming three. And it also keeps our home record intact as well, which is very important for us this season.
But sometimes to like, it's like playing a pre-season friendly, I must think. You know, sometimes you need lesser opposition to get things going, and then you test yourself against better opposition. It's almost like we got our attack going again, didn't we, in this game against lesser opposition. You know, we've got a cup game next week, so hopefully when we come back, we've actually got a fairly kind run of fixtures. I'm touching wood. Why did I say that? But we've got a reasonably kind run of fixtures for all, haven't we? So, you know, it's a real opportunity to try these things, isn't it, and get our attack going again and functioning again, like it hasn't really in December, I suppose. So kind of useful in that respect. And we saw some good attacking patterns again, didn't we? And we saw a good performance from Bamford, and Rutter tried in a slightly different position and what have you. So it's kind of, you hope it's fuel for the next few games going forward, isn't it? And like you say, like motivation and a bit of fuel for the coaches to think, hang on, we can attack in different ways here. We can, you know, we can set the team up differently, because we were kind of getting frustrated, weren't we, with Farke using the same setup every week. And it's changed it around a bit now, and we've sort of alighted on one perhaps in this game that could work against better teams with more polishing.
I agree. So this question isn't on the running order. I just realised that I didn't put anything about it, but I just want to talk a bit about our press in this game, because there was a bit of chat in the group chat about our press. So I want to get your thoughts on how our press did in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm allowed to swear on this podcast.
we'll take a little light swear words.
Yeah, my note here, 23 minutes, Leeds press is shit. and I put that in the group chat. I was watching it early tonight, and straight away Tom Wilson, focused on Leeds, Tom Wilson came back and said, yeah, it always is against these bad teams. And it's almost like, I kind of wonder if it's a bit half-hearted, and Tom sort of said the same, that like our press against Leicester away was absolutely tip-top. We pressed Ipswich to death. There's been some other games where we've pressed well as well. But often against these lesser teams, it's almost like we don't even need to try that hard. I mean, not that we... It wasn't always bad. There were moments when we nicked the ball off Birmingham. I think the second goal came from reasonable pressing, and we won the ball high up and counter-pressed, didn't we, and got the second goal before half-time. So it wasn't bad the whole game, but it was quite lacklustre at times. And it's almost like there was one time where Jorginho was going to press, I forget who it was, I think it might have been the outside left centre-back. Yeah, I think it was. And Dan James kind of trotted up next to him, and the guy just played the ball between them, and we were broken, and away Birmingham went. And it's just like, I think that might have been the thing that triggered me, like Leeds press is shit. So it was almost like half-assed, you know what I mean? It was a bit like they weren't kind of killing themselves to press Birmingham. I'm not even sure what the press plan was. I mean, we weren't pressing them high. It was kind of mid-block and then just jumping on them when they got into the midfield a bit. It wasn't particularly high press, was it? In all phases anyway, occasional?
No, I would agree with that we have definitely seen better pressing performances from us than this game.
I mean, the pressing was crap at Preston and West Brom as well.
Other than a few moments, yeah, I would agree. I don't think pressing gave us too many opportunities to press. They didn't really engage with the press and generally looked to go a bit more direct. And I think Birmingham did also do that as well a fair bit. And there was quite a lot of long balls, especially getting it back. Yeah, so that sort of nullified it a little bit in its own way. But despite Athletes not being that great, Birmingham didn't really create any opportunities. What do you think? Do you think that was down to Birmingham being shit, or was that us in our deeper areas defending better?
I mean, there's a couple of fairly quick interchanges where they got in behind a little bit, but generally our centre backs were able to deal with their forwards. And they weren't really able to hold the ball at worthy the Birmingham forwards. I mean, I quite like Stansfield and Bakuna and the other guy whose name has escaped me now.
Dembele.
But Dembele, yeah. But they just lacked anyone that could hold the ball up. You know, they basically, like, we kind of on the preview, we kind of speculated, didn't we, about them using Jukovic as a hold up player, or if they go for the quick players. And I think you were suggesting they should play a target man hold up player, and I think, yeah, having watched the game, I think it might have helped if they've had, you know, like Jukovic in there with Stansfield or with Dembele to run off him, you know, as a kind of a pair. So I just think our centre halves were just quick enough, and they're just too powerful and strong for those two, and they weren't really getting runners around them from deep. So it was quite easy, really, to defend from that perspective, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd agree. I think especially Rodon had a good game in this individually. He did the best of his duels and really did help us out in a lot of circumstances. But just moving on to a different question, Georgie played as a 10 in this game, which is something a lot of fans have been crying out for a long time for various reasons. But how do you think he did in this match, and what differences were you seeing compared to when he played as a striker?
Well, I think he had a great game. And he had acres of space to play in, and he gave Georgie Rutter acres of space to play in. He's gonna hurt you, and he hurt Birmingham a lot, didn't he? And he just looked to be enjoying himself. It was a great watch. It was a great view. I really liked how he drifted out, combined with the wingers, particularly on the right hand side. So he almost played like an inverted, like, right winger at times, didn't he? There were the sort of positions he was picking up and coming in on his left foot from the right hand side. So that's perhaps something we could do with him in the future as well. We could use him on the right in that respect. I think. He had a really, really good fun game. I think he was up against a completely outmatched opponent, and I think he had a really nice combination with Bamford. I thought Bamford making runs in behind and laying the ball off to Georgie worked quite well. I thought some of their combination play after the first few minutes was, you know, once we got into the game, was really good. It was just really nice. I quite like him in this role. I'd quite like to see him off the right as well. I think this could work. I wouldn't want to completely and utterly abandon the Perreault-Georgie partnership either, because I think there's been times and that's been really good. So I think what we've got is like a lot of very nice talented forwards that bring different things, and I'd like to see perhaps a horses for courses approach from Farke and use different combinations of forwards for different games for different reasons. And you know, this was a good example of when a centre forward like Bamford, a classic nine if you like, or something close to a classic nine, dragged centre backs around and made space for Georgie, but there might be other games when we want Georgie kind of high up the pitch and combining with Perreault.
Yep, it's all very good points. And I think I think some of the reasons why Georgie was able to get on the ball more was just because he didn't have to make those runs forward as often. So he was able to get involved in deeper areas more. And I think this is the most passes that he's completed in a game for us this season. So he's completed more, I think it was, he attempted 44 and completed 31. So that's the most by a good 9 passes. The next closest was against Plymouth, where he had 35 attempted. So he's getting on the ball a lot more often. And when you've got a player of Georgie's quality, you want to get him on the ball more often. And it did really work to get more out of him and get him into different areas to combine with players. And like you mentioned there, that he was drifting over to the right side. When he was drifting over to the right side, you had Dan James, who was inverting and staying on the last line. So he was looking to make runs forward as well. So he did a lot of good things, bringing him that little bit deeper than what he normally does. Obviously, he still did most of the same sort of things as he always does, but just more of it. He was able to get on the ball more often, and it just really did work in this game. Obviously, it could be different in other games against opponents who don't make it as easy for us as what Birmingham did. But we had another question from Wiggy on Twitter. Did having Bamford up front change our approach play in any way? What do you think of that one?
Yeah, well, this is going back to the whole discussion around depth, isn't it? We just, for the first time, we had a forward who wants to go up against his centre-back and roll his centre-back and go behind. So it's that depth point, isn't it? Just more often than not, we had someone dragging the centre-back away, and it's just making space. You know, is it zone 14 or whatever? It's just in front of the penalty box. There's always a lot more space there for players like Georgie to run into, or for Dan James to invert into, or whatever. So I just think this is the benefit of a proper centre forward, isn't it? Taking care of centre backs, taking them out of the game, making space for those other players. So that's the big benefit of having Bamford. And I guess in games where it might work in other sorts of games where we're looking for hold up play a bit more. You know, if we're kind of under, you know, if we're up against a better team who'd onto the ball, someone like Bamford might be handy in terms of holding the ball up. Although Georgie holds the ball up pretty well, to be fair, when he plays at nine. So it's not a big issue. But yeah, I just think it's just having that kind of nine profile, dragging centre-backs around, really helped, didn't it?
I would agree with that. I don't think the way we approached the final third really changed too much. I think it was still pretty much the same sort of style of approaching, yeah, as they did. But there were just better spaces opened up because of Bamford's movement inside the box and the way he obviously generates defenders looking at him and making sure he's tightly watched because he's always there. He doesn't let up, doesn't Bamford, when he gets an area that he likes to run into. So it's something that the opposition centre-backs always have to be worried about, which is why he is so good and why he always worked so well under Bielsa, even when he wasn't scoring that many goals. Just his general movement itself creates space for others, and that's why that sort of profile, I think number nine, like you mentioned, is great for us at this moment. But just to talk about this a bit more generally, do you feel that Georgie can work as a 10 with Perreault as a 9? Or do you think this is something we can only do when he's playing alongside Bamford or a similar profile number 9?
No, we saw it against Preston, I think, didn't we, where Perreault kind of went to 9. Georgie kind of dropped in quite a lot. They interchange quite a bit, don't they? Don't think it quite works. I think it could possibly work if the wingers were really, really, really like kind of narrow in behind type wingers. You know, to give us that, like I say, that attacking in behind play. But no, I think Georgie 9, Perreault 10 is the way to go with those two as a pair. I mean, I'd be up for seeing Perreault with Bamford actually as a pair, and that could work quite well. You know, with Bamford as a 9 and Perreault as a 10, because Bamford does make those kind of near post and depth runs, and Perreault can come in later and arrive in the penalty spot. So that might be something that works quite well actually. But no, I think we should stick with Georgie at 9 and Perreault at 10 when they're the combination. And I think both Georgie and Perreault can play as a 10 with Bamford.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the overriding thing is you need someone who is going to be making, I think, centre-forward runs as well as being able to press efficiently and well, which is something which Bamford has and Georgie has as well. I don't think he's quite as good at pressing as what Bamford is, but that's just that experience of Bamford. He's been doing it for longer. He knows the best way to do it. And it's not like Georgie is bad at it. He's better than what Perreault is at it. That's mainly because he's got added help from his physicality and pace that he's got in his game, which Perreault doesn't have as much of, which really helps Georgie to make that number 9 spot his own when both those two are on the pitch. But yeah, it is definitely something to think about. And now that Matt is clearly able to play more minutes, he started this game and did well. It'd be good to see him use more in different combinations, like you mentioned earlier, with you could have Rutter playing on the right, and then you'd have a front line, which is Somerville on the left, and you have Perreault behind Matt as the striker, and Rutter on the right. That could also work very well.
I think to make that work, you'd want Spence playing high and wide on the right, wouldn't you, I think?
Yeah, definitely.
Because the way Rutter sort of floats, and you want Rutter on the ball a lot, so you kind of want him operating like a wide 10, really, don't you, off the right, and drifting and playmaking and doing his thing. Yeah, so you'd definitely want Spence or someone like Spence really bombing on the right-hand side to make that really work. But yeah, I mean, that's what I want to see.
You know what it's almost starting to sound like, this wide right 10 that you're talking about? It's almost starting to sound a bit like Emi Buendia. That could be Rutter's role in the future if we use Bamford as the Pookie and Rutter on the right as the Buendia, dropping deeper and having the same wide fullback at side rim. But yeah, something to think about for future. We had a question from Josie on Twitter, and she says, does Kamara slow our attacks down too much? We seem to get an attacking movement going and then he'll pass backwards or bust pitch, which slows our momentum. He's a good player, but in traditional attacks this looks to be a problem to me. What do you make to this one, Dan?
I think it's true of Kamara and Ampadu. I don't think neither of them are super duper kind of, you know, big switches of the ball or super duper like incisive passes of the ball, aren't they? They're both kind of guys that like to turn it over and move the ball, get the ball moving. So I don't think Kamara particularly slows attacks down too much in compared to Ampadu, but I do think he is quite a safe player, or he's become quite a safe player. I sometimes wonder if Kamara was playing in a midfield three, you might feel like he's got a little bit more freedom to kind of, you know, be more press resistant and take and do more ball carrying, which I think he can do quite well. So I wonder if there's an element because he knows he's in a double pivot, he's got to play it safe. I wonder if there's a bit of that, a bit of team instruction perhaps. But yeah, neither of them are particularly expansive passers, are they really? They're more just guys that keep the ball moving and keep it turning over and win the ball and turn it over type guys. So yeah, I just think it's just a profile thing really, isn't it?
I think it's just mainly that could just be what Mark Farker wants from his midfielders, is to generally be pretty safe and reliable and just link things off rather than going for the high risk balls, which will lose possession. He's wanting to try to keep all the ball. I think he does do a good job linking up in the transitional attacks with Kamara. There's one particular movement, I think about 60 or so minutes in, where the crowd was getting going with the way when we was passing it, and there's just a nice little interchange, Kamara in the middle of it, and then Bamford tried to cut the ball back to Somerville, but it got cut out at the end, and that was a particularly great move and could have been a nice goal at the end of it. But to be fair, Birmingham centre back Sanderson did a good job of cutting it out, but yeah, I think largely
you could see him doing it in a like a more expansive team as one of two eights, him getting further forward and being more expansive, couldn't you? You could see it in his game and him getting wider and higher and combining wingers and stuff, couldn't you? I think that's something he could do.
Yeah, I think he would have been good under Bielsa, to be honest. I think he would have been able to do the click roll quite well. He does make some good movements. I've noticed in this game as well, he often makes these runs forward, which I quite remember isn't the sort of runs that Click used to make getting forward, and it just reminded me of Click in those individual moments. But largely I like Kamara, and I didn't see anything too bad with his game in this one.
No, it's fine. It was just a steady way game, not a great one, not a bad one, just did his job really, one of those sort of performances.
Finally, other than the players we've already discussed, who stood out for you in the game for either good or bad reasons?
Well, for emotional reasons and sentimental reasons, like I'm going to say Pat Bamford. You know, I'm guilty of sort of giving up on him a little bit, but thinking, yeah, his days are numbered, and perhaps his days still are numbered. But you know, that performance made me think, oh, maybe there's a bit of life in the old dog yet. So, you know, if we're lucky and if we can learn to manage his body, we've got a blueprint for a pretty decent different type of centre forward performance there that can help players like Rutter and Somerville in different ways. So, you know, I hope Fark uses that and thinks, yeah, I've got a player in Bamford, and perhaps Bamford isn't the guy you bring off to get you a goal with 10 minutes to play. But if there's a game where you feel like you need his runs and his hold-up play and his centre-forward play, then use it from the start and then bring somebody else on to nick goals later on.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. He's the player who he's not an impact player, isn't Bamford. You're not going to get that sort of thing from him in moments. He needs longer stretches of game time to be able to do what he's good at. And we all know his inconsistencies with finishing, but he is still very capable of doing a lot of good for the team, even when he's not scoring goals. So I would agree. He was very good in this game. He was doing a lot of good movements and link-ups with different players and generally doing the things that we all love Bamford for from his history with us. And it was all very good to see. Nothing made me happier in that game than Bamford scoring a goal, because I just know how massive that is for him, because he's a confidence player. And now he's got that goal, that will really help him get into the right frame of mind to play more football. As long as we don't overuse him, we don't want to break him again. Just don't even have to use him every game, use him every other game, in a game there where we particularly think that we'll need a classic number nine to do what he does. But other than Bamford, who else was good for you?
Well, again, we all know the issues of this guy. his issues of availability. Can you guess who I'm talking about?
I wonder.
It's Mr. Firpo. yeah, Mr. Firpo. But he does have some upside, and it's his overlapping and those low cutback crosses. He did a couple in this game. He made his name for them at Betis, which got him a big money move to Barcelona. Like, he's really, really good at that kind of stuff, isn't he? And with a player like Somerville on the left-hand side, coming in on the right-hand side, from an attacking perspective, there are going to be games where Firpo gives us a lot of that width on the left-hand side that we don't always have when we play Barham at left-back, because he tends to invert also. And it could work. But now the only problem with Firpo, there are two big problems with Firpo. Defensively, he's suspect. He almost got caught a couple of times. I've got on my note here, Firpo defending, 3! 48 minutes.
Yeah, I
can't remember
what
it was now, but he got caught. And also, it's just availability. He can't stay fit. So Leeds United, you know, I implore you, please get a left back. but if, again, like Bamford, if we can treat him in such a way that there are certain games when maybe against low block teams at home when we need that extra width and that extra attacking outlet on the left-hand side, Firpo could be handy. And it's just a weapon we can use sparingly and hopefully keep fit and able to drop it in on the team now and again. So, yeah, he added something to the team. And it was good to see. It's good to watch when Firpo goes on the outside and puts those great low crosses in. They're really good, aren't they? They're good, dangerous crosses. So, you know, it'd be churlish of me not to praise him for what he's good at, but we all know what he's not good at. And we've already mentioned Rodon. I think Rodon was just like impeccable at the back, wasn't he? Just mopped everything up, basically, all day long.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I thought him and I think that actually did especially good in this game, I thought. On the ball especially, he was very good. So when Birmingham were pressing, he was good at finding little ways to get out of it and using his ball carrying to get us out of certain situations. And I thought he had a good game. There were quite a few comments in our group chat about certain Liam Cooper, about having a really, really bad game. And I could see where the people were coming from in some moments, especially in the first half. There was a lot of him getting quite high and aggressive and then not winning the ball, and which led to the player running into acres of space. And I can't deny those ones. But I thought on the ball, he was good. There was nothing to complain about on the ball. So those first moments in the first half, and I think that sort of settled down in the second half. I don't think he was going for those aggressive moves further up the pitch as often. So, but I can see why people were annoyed at him from the first half especially. What did you make to him?
Yeah, I agree. So I didn't watch the game on Monday. I wasn't there. And I was just hearing the comments about Cooper, and I was expecting like a complete Cooper disaster class. And I don't think there was. I mean, yeah, there was a couple of moments in the first half where he came up aggressively, like Stroke's been doing recently, and, you know, and then, like, stepping up and out of the line and trying to win the header. And Stroke's been winning those headers, hasn't he, and winning those challenges, but Cooper didn't. He got turned. So there were a couple of moments, but I think he adjusted, actually, and then second half he was good, and it cost us nothing. So, yeah, it wasn't quite the disaster class people I was expecting, having watched it again, you know, a couple of days later, with the emotion out of it and stuff. So, yeah, like I say, it's fair posing. And obviously, I think Cooper was fine, and I'm not overly worried about Cooper right now. He seems to be playing okay. He was perfectly decent at West Brom. Nothing there was on him. So, you know, if Stuart needs a week or so just to get fit, I've got no massive concerns about using Cooper in the short term.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I would rather give Strauch a longer rest, and he doesn't need to play at all in the game against Peterborough in the cup. Just let Cooper play that game alongside Cresswell, maybe give Rodon a rest. But yeah, we won't talk too much about football. But that's about everything for the Birmingham game. Unless anything else which you want to talk about?
Well, I'm going to challenge the comment about club cup football. I like cup football. I'm going to Peter on Saturday on Sunday. I'm breaking away from All Stats That Week tradition.
There's always got to be one black sheep, and we'll let you be our black sheep.
There's one black sheep. Yeah, I might get a ticket. I'm going to Peterborough for the first time. So there we go. No, but like I say, just a couple of... I really hope that the Bamford performance, the Rutter performance at 10, the Bamford performance at 9 gives him food for thought about how to use the forward line in different games. And I'm very much... I like Perreault. I think Perreault's a really, really good footballer. We've just got to work out how to get use him to his best advantage. I just really hope, like, Fark really thinks about that, and we'll work out some better ways of getting the most out of Perreault, the most out of Bamford, the most out of Rutter, and, you know, in the right combinations. And also, same with Firpo. I hope, you know, Firpo can stay fit, then he's a handy weapon to have for some games, but not all games. And I do hope we get a left back in.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. And that's everything now for the discussion for these games. And just a reminder quickly, the website for our Patreon is patreon.com/ASAW Patreon. But that's everything for tonight. Our next game is against Peterborough in the cup. And as usual, we won't be entertaining this nonsense. In the immortal words of Dan Driver, pub football isn't real football. So we'll next be back with a bonus pod for our patrons. It should be over the weekend, we're hoping to record it, which will... maybe a little bit of talk about the transfer window, and also about the recent issues that we've had with our open play packing and reasons why we think it's happening. So that should be an entertaining podcast for our patrons. But the next pod for everyone to listen to will be our preview of our next league opponent, which is Cardiff City. But for now, I'll say thank you very much to Dan.
Cheers, Martin.
And thank you to you, dear listeners. Have a great week. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.